Hello, everyone. Everyone's thinking about a drink. I know we were just saying that going this late in the afternoon, I know that I'm holding you up from that. My name is Jackie Davey. I'm with Lincoln Financial Advisors. I'm with our agribusiness division. I have a financial planning practice in Houston. We service clients in 14 states, with the bulk of my clients being in Texas. I chose agribusiness to concentrate on for a couple reasons. One, I do raise cattle, and I'm never happier than when I'm out in the field and working cattle and in my pasture. And two, I feel like it's an underserviced area of financial planning, and it's one with unique needs that needs it the most, but underserviced. So this is just my compliance. I'm not giving legal or tax advice. The number of farms specializing in cotton production decreased almost 30% from 2002 to 2007. We don't have, I checked, I didn't see that we've got the 2012 census out yet. Everything that I'm basing, all my facts and figures are based on the last census, which was 2007. Operators 65 years or older account for 26% of farm operators. So why is this important? If these were 65 and older in more of a corporate sense, most, if not all, of these individuals would be either thinking about or exiting the workforce. You just don't see that in agriculture. You see people working longer, working later. Rarely do I come across a farmer or a rancher that says, I'm going to retire tomorrow and I'm going to go play golf every day. I get a lot of times that they're going to die on their tractor. That's how they want to retire. That's how they want to go out. Large family farms and very large family farms make up only 9% of overall farms. We're not just dealing with cotton here, but all farms. So when we're talking large and very large, these are sales, annual gross sales between $250,000 and $500,000 and up. However, this 9% produce more than 63% of the value of agriculture products sold. So if these farms are going to survive and thrive for multiple generations, planning needs to start now and be done now to keep this tradition going and to keep agriculture alive for multiple generations. What makes agriculture owners unique? Well, often the largest asset is land, which is typically illiquid. Rarely, again, do they plan to retire in the traditional sense. A lot of times the goal is to retain some control over the operation while passing it either slowly or giving up a little bit of that day-to-day hourly operation to the next generation. And a lot of times, not all, but frequently, there's multiple heirs. One or two may be in the family business, but there's other heirs outside the family business. And how do we make it fair for those children that are in the family business and those children that are out when we're talking about inheritance and passing along assets? You know, you hear a lot of fair versus equal. Those two are not synonymous. It's not always the same thing. So what can be done to address the issues? Comprehensive planning. It has to address the effective transfer of the land, equalization to multiple heirs, financial independence. Where's the cash flow going to come from if you do exit the agribusiness and you do pass that on to the next generation? And then tax reduction strategies. You've heard of people having to sell off family land to pay the tax man. One of the things that we really concentrate on is how can we reduce or even eliminate those taxes so that we don't break up these farms and further reduce the size of them. There are 6 stages to a comprehensive financial plan. I'm going to kind of go through them today. Engage, collect, analyze, design, implement, and then review. I've tried to think of an acronym for them. I've never actually come up with one that works. So we're going to go through these 6 stages. Step 1, when we're talking to a agribusiness owner, we really want to start defining what are the values, the visions, and the goals for that family. This is really more of soft data questions, getting to know what do you want. Is it to pass the land to the family? Is it to sell to a third party? Is it to die on your tractor? And is that feasible? What's going to happen to your wife or your husband if you're no longer there? So these are some of the questions that we ask. Should only lineal descendants be allowed ownership interest? Can the owner or owners retire without converting assets to cash? Is there the cash flow there? Are there investable assets? Is there an income stream? How much equity are the owners willing to give up now? How much control are they willing to give up now? So equity, control, income, three things that you're always going to have to ask yourself. How much am I willing to give up? How much do I want to keep? And the land may be ready for the next generation. You've done everything you can to make it a successful business, but is the next generation ready for the land? Is there a successor in place that can run that farm or that ranch? I'm going to kind of, as we're going through these, I'm going to use a case study. We met a cattle rancher in Texas. He and his wife, a very successful couple, have four children. Oldest son quit his job, exited his career, moved to the ranch, and runs the day-to-day. The oldest daughter keeps all the computer records, all of the transfers, all the acquisitions. She goes to cattle sales with her father. She buys cattle with him. She does all the insemination records. And then there's two younger daughters who go to the ranch on weekends. They bring their kids. They're there almost every weekend, but they don't participate in the business at all. When I first met them, I met the wife and the oldest daughter, and asked them, well, what is the goal? And they both said, well, my oldest son, and the daughter said, my brother should inherit 100% of the ranch. He's there. He gave up everything. It should be his. Well, okay. Went and sat down with mom and dad later, and dad says, no, I can't have that happening because my oldest daughter's an integral part of this business. You have to figure out a way that she can participate in it too, and that she can get some of, if she can participate in this now. So here are his answers to those questions. Only lineal descendants, yes. Remember, he has three daughters. No one is good enough for his daughters, including the three men who married them, okay? He does not want them to get his assets. He never wants them influencing his daughter's decisions. Can the owners retire without converting assets to cash? In this case, yes, they could. They had investable assets. How much equity were they willing to give up? Some. He wants to still have his hands on the reins and be able to control some of the business. He's been in the cattle business since the late 60s. He's done a lot of work on his breeding program and his and the genetics that have been put into his program, and he wants to make sure that he can still have some of the control. So he wanted to keep some of it. And the land is ready for the next generation. They felt like their kids are ready now to start running that business. They're just not willing to give 100% of it up. So step one was really kind of getting those visions. What is his vision? His vision is to have his son start running it, but not give it up, and have the oldest daughter participate. So step two in the process is really collecting data. Now we're going from soft data to hard data that's going to help us assess what is the current situation. Because now what we're talking about is we're taking step one, we need to match step two and see if everything's in line. Before we go any further, I want to define roles here. Your attorney. Everybody that we do planning with or typically has advisors that they've worked with already. They have an attorney, they have a CPA, and they have an investment advisor, okay? The attorney's drafted wills, trusts, LLCs, partnerships. How many people here have their wills and their everything drafted? At least have a will. Right. So you're coming into the game with part of your plan done. Your CPA files your tax returns. They make sure that you get as many exemptions as you can. They make sure that you get as many write-offs. They try to reduce that tax fight. And then an investment advisor who oversees your portfolio of stocks, bonds, mutual funds, alternative investments, whatever those are. When we move to step two in the planning process, it's important that an agribusiness owner gets all of these things together. Get your wills, your trusts, your powers of attorney, corporate structure documents, all investment statements, an investment policy statement, which everyone should have, that tells your investment advisor what your risk tolerance is, your objectives for your investments, and your time horizon for those investments, so that they know how to run that ship, how to steer that. Your 2 years tax returns, if you're not collecting Social Security benefit statements, pull those offline. I don't know if you've noticed, they no longer send them to you anymore. You have to sign up on the SSA.gov in order to get those Social Security estimate statements, and then life insurance policies. The goal here is to see, okay, we're going to take all of this, we're going to put it into a financial condition model to get a very clear picture of how does everything work now? How are the assets being passed now? You may think one thing, but your beneficiary designation say something else. Or once somebody starts getting into your will, we never know what we're going to find. A lot of times we find that people are giving assets outright to their children, and when they wrote the will, the children were young, they didn't have any problems, and now I've got a child who's, you know, driving around recklessly, he's getting, you know, there's a lawsuit against him, there's all kinds of things. So we analyze all that data, we take it, we put it into one place, one model that takes all those puzzle pieces and says, is there something that doesn't fit? And if there is, then we need to identify those now so that we can move on to solutions. The gentleman that I was speaking about came to us with this was his situation. They had cash and equivalents of $6 million. They had a residence worth $1 million. The ranch was $5.2 million. Equipment and machinery about $150,000. And they had investable assets of about $2.6 million. So a little under $15 million was their total estate. However, what his current document said, you can see there, is that 25% went to each kid. And because they exceeded the lifetime exemption amount, we were going to have to pay estate taxes of about $1.7 million. Now, in this case, he's got the cash, he's got the investable assets to pay that tax, but who would want to write that check to the IRS if you don't have to? So all in all, the children get about $3.3 million each after the taxes. But here are the gaps that we see between what he told us and what his current situation was telling us once we analyzed the data. One, the son that he wanted to inherit the majority of the ranch was getting 25%, an equal amount to his siblings, despite the fact that he'd left his career, moved to the ranch, and works there every single day. The daughter, who he adores and who has been working on the computer records, keeping everything, participates in the ranch, was receiving 25% as well. And the two youngest daughters, who don't have anything to do with the business, were getting $1.3 million of a business that they don't have to do a thing for. So again, is that fair? Because it certainly is equal to all kids. And a good portion, about 12% here, was going to pay estate taxes. Now, we've seen that as high as 40 plus. Depending on how the estate is structured. So the next step is we took all of this information, the coordination gaps, now we know what we need to bridge, and we designed strategies to close those coordination gaps. In this case, we recommended a new entity to hold the land to take advantage of the current lifetime exemption. The example you just saw was based on 2013 exemption amounts, was 10.5 for a couple. Does everyone understand what the lifetime exemption means? No? Okay. You have $5.25 million per person that you can pass estate tax free to the next generation, so $10.5 million per couple. So in this case, he had $15 million. They could pass $10.5 million estate tax free. Anything above that is taxed. Okay, so you have a lifetime exemption amount. You can do it if there's what's called portability. If he did not use his spouse could take advantage of any unused exemption amount. Okay, so what we're doing with the new entity is we're taking advantage of that now versus at his death, which is what we can do that. You can use your lifetime exemption during your lifetime by gifting those assets. And then using gifting limits, which were $14,000 per donee, per person. So they could gift $14,000 to every single one of their grandkids, no tax on that. We were going to gift greater shares of the ranch to the oldest son and daughter because of their participation, and equalize the inheritance to the other two daughters using investable assets and art, and begin taking advantage of annual gifting now. So one of the things that we did, which is not up here, is that we did, you can, you know, we talked about control and an owner wanting to maintain control. A lot of times what we see when we create these entities is that we can create voting and non-voting interest. So they can go ahead and gift the non-voting shares first so that they can maintain control. Step five is implementation. You've heard you can lead a horse to water. What we see a lot of times is that people come to us, they have a plan, they've created a family limited partnership, let's say, but they've never funded it. They have a trust. Nothing's inside the trust. It's really important. I mean, if without implementation, a plan is nothing but a big paperweight. So once this plan is complete, you decide on what strategies you're going to implement. You've still got a ways to go before you see the finish line, and that's implementation. For this, I just went over the strategies that they chose to adopt. So we had an attorney draft a new LLC that holds only the land, the equipment and machinery he didn't want to put in there. It's depreciating assets. It wasn't going to do us much good. We deeded the land from the existing partnership to that new LLC so that it was separated into its own entity, because that's really what he wanted to gift. Then did an appraisal of the LLC assets using minority interest discounts. So what I'm talking about when I'm saying minority interest discounts, if I am his child and I have received shares of this LLC and I want to go out and sell those shares, who wants to buy my portion of a ranch with my siblings? It's lack of marketability. There's not a market somewhere that I can just go out and get a dollar for dollar. So instead of this being a dollar for dollar, we're discounting it and using less of our exemption so we can then fill it up later. We also gifted shares to the oldest son and daughter, and we had drafted new wills to equalize to the other assets. Step six is just reviewing what we've done. How are the assets passing now that we've revised the distribution of them? What are the revised estate projection, settlement cost projection? What remains of the lifetime exemption amount? Do we want to use it now? Do we want to leave it till death? Do we want to wait till later? At first death, will the surviving spouse have sufficient assets? And have we identified assets for retirement income? And then on the investable assets, we're looking at return risk. So the results of this case, we removed $5.2 million from the estate that's now no longer subject to taxation. We decreased that liability. Instead of writing a check to the government for $1.7 million, we're writing zero. The oldest son is now receiving the majority shares of the ranching business. The oldest daughter is receiving shares for her participation. And the two youngest daughters are not left out. They're not unintentionally disinherited. They're receiving assets as well. So I know that was kind of quick, but it's 15 minutes and he gave me my 3-minute warning. So if you have a question. Yes, sir.
Can you buy a life insurance policy on those folks in case they don't outlive the 3-year look back period that might screw up that bypass trust or whatever in terms of including it in somebody's estate or not?
We can. In this case, we don't really need to because of the size of his investable assets. You're talking about once we get the assets out of the estate.
The look back.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be a case by case basis. This client is 71 years old and he's healthier than I am. I mean, he could run circles around me. If we are worried about the look back period, we can buy a life insurance policy. And that's also another way that we equalize. If we didn't have the investable assets like we do in this case with the two youngest daughters, we can insure mom and dad in order to pass those assets to the younger daughters to leverage.
Thank you.